This Shabbos is also Tu B'Shvat, so let's open up with asking the obvious question of what does Tu B'Shvat have to do with us? We understand that as halachic ramifications as far as determining which year a tree is in, vis-a-vis its years of Orla, vis-a-vis its fruit that it produces, does it belong to, these are the fruits of 5767, or these are still last year's fruits, these are the fruits that budded last year, they weren't fully ripe until you ate them, or they weren't marketed to you until after Rosh Hashanah, right? So Tu B'Shvat is the cutoff point of, that this is, 5767 as far as trees go, and the fruits that grow from Tu B'Shvat onwards are called the fruits of 5767. So they're from that year as far as whether it's Maaser Sheni or Maaser Ani, right? Right, so it's a halachic date. It's a date that has halachic significance. We have many dates like this in halacha. I'll give an example. Like Rosh Chodesh Elul is the same idea as far as Maaser Behema. Every year you have to take off thites, Maaser from your, livestock. Okay, so we say the cutoff point is Rosh Chodesh Elul. That's where it's going to be a transition between last year's and this year, vis-a-vis now you need to take a new thith, right? And we don't celebrate Rosh Chodesh Elul, even though it's a Rosh Hashanah as far as Maaser Behema, right? So this Tu B'Shvat, that's a date which has significance as far as the halachic nature of what year is a tree in, vis-a-vis Orla, what year are its fruits from? Are they from this year or from last year? Well, until Tu B'Shvat, it's all called continuation of last year's produce. From Tu B'Shvat onwards, it's this year's produce. Fine. So we understand the halachic significance of Tu B'Shvat. Why do we celebrate? Why do we omit Tachanun? Why is it a day that this year not because it comes out on Shabbos, but in regular, and when it comes out on a regular weekday, where we're allowed to say, personal bakashas, personal requests, which we don't say on Shabbos. So we also daven to have a good Esro, in this upcoming Sukkot. Where does the meaning for man, where is that in Tu B'Shvat? Well, it's seemingly a halachic date, especially for the halachas of a tree. Like, what does it have to do with man? Right, that's the question we have to ask. Okay? We also have to research the relationship that Tu B'Shvat has with Parshas B'Shalach, because very often it comes out in the week of Parshas B'Shalach. This year it comes out mamish on the day we read Parshas B'Shalach, so there must be a connection. Now what the connection is, I want to save for later, because if we mention it from now, it just will spoil the surprise. All right, so let's first just take the scenic route around, and let's just note that we do find that man is called a tree, right? In Parshas Shoftim, by the prohibition of destroying fruit trees, even of a city that you're at war with, right? Lo tashes etza, and the Torah says a reason, ki adam etza sarah, for even man is like the tree of the field that gives fruit. Right? It's like setting up man with, the tree, right? Even later in that Parsha, there's yet another allusion to this, not as open, but it's an allusion in the negative, meaning to say that the halach of Egla Rufa, which is the way Parsha Shoftim ends off, right? The halach of Egla Rufa is that the a person is found murdered between towns, so the elders of the closest town have to bring this calf that never did any work, right? And its neck is broken. Right, in a Nachal Eson, in a valley by a stream, an area which has never been worked and has never produced fruit, and it all symbolizes this guy died prematurely before bearing fruit, before making his full contribution. So also, the calf and also the area, right, an area that didn't bear fruit. So man is like a calf, that we can understand, because that's a domesticated animal that does work, right? And this man didn't finish his life's work. He was murdered prematurely. But also the area, you know, because he's also like the earth that didn't produce fruit. So again, another allusion to that. The man is like the fruit-bearing tree. And we know that the Torah throughout Tanakh and Chazal is called the Eitz Chaim. Eitz Chaim alludes to the Torah, right? The Torah is called Eitz Chaim l'machazikim ba. So something, you know, in common, you know, between a tree and man and the Torah, and we have to get out what is that common denominator, and then we can understand how Tu B'Shvat affects us also, right? There are two major, you know, processes that a tree epitomizes, right? It's the epitome of two processes that are really processes that aren't just limited to a tree. They're processes in the entirety of reality, but the tree especially represents that process, right? It's a process general to, you know, the entirety of reality and to man in particular and to the Torah in particular, right? And they are two things. First and foremost, the most obvious one, is that the tree bears fruit. That's, you know, the tree, when it bears fruit, it's not just like, it's like a productive laborer. It's not the same. It is what I was alluding to when we mentioned Egla Rufa. It's not redundant. We take a calf that didn't work ever, and we break its neck in a land that never produced fruit. It's not redundant. It's really talking about two different things, right? Two different types of productivity. One is epitomized, let's say, by the beast of burden, right? And the other one is epitomized by, bearing fruit in the agricultural sense. And there are two different types of productivity. Right? The productivity of an animal, it does work, right? And of course, you know, the work, you know, is lucrative. It's profitable. You know, it pushes, you know, it accomplishes, right? You know, it's progress, but it's like more of the same. It's you know, like doing the job, you know, it's just filling a quota, right? You know, that's the type of work an animal does, the type of work that, it's the type of work a person does in a factory. That type of work of just putting the pieces together. The more pieces put together, the more profit you have. But it's just putting the pieces together or pushing the plow, right? Pushing the grinding stone in the mill. Right, it's pushing, and that pushing, and, you know, is productive. But a tree does something totally different. Right, the productivity of a tree is to make new things that there never were before. Where does this fruit? Fruit is not assembled from parts like the way we produce something in a factory. Right, the work that the tree does is amazing. Right, it takes nutrients from the ground. It takes nutrients from the air. And, you know, and from the water, obviously, and it produces fruit. It produces something amazing that there never was, right? The fruit is not the sum of, you know, earth, air, and water, right? We'll try to do it in a laboratory, earth, air, and water. We won't be able to produce fruit, right? The tree is an amazing thing that it makes chidush, something new that there never was. Something new that's not just the sum of its parts. It's a chiddush. It's something new. It's something totally new. And that's something unique that man can do that the beast of burden can't do. What man has in common with the beast of burden, they could both do the same type of work as in, pull pieces together. You know, push a plow. Doing physical labor and the benefits that come from a certain amount of labor. You know, those benefits add up to some, to profits, right? But that's just adding up things, adding up effort, adding up pieces. Yeah, but then man could do things that, parallel what the tree can do, and only the tree can do other than man. And that's to make innovations, right? An airplane is not just the sum of its parts. Just to give an example from the innovation of secular life, let's say, to make an airplane. It's not just, if I throw a bunch of metal together, I'm not going to have an airplane, right? It's the design, it's the technology, it's the special form and the aerodynamics, and it's a whole chiddush, metal, it's not that a certain amount of metal, if you put it together, it can fly. It's not the principle of an airplane, right? The principle of an airplane is that, it's not the quantity of the metal, it's the special intelligent design. And produce something more than just a whole bunch of metal together. It's like they could fly, And you know, that's the type of things that man can do. But even that is not a real chiddush. That's what the Kohelet says, Ein chiddush tachas haShemesh. There's nothing really new under the sun. Because really, the power of technology was there already. In truth, you know, the laws of aerodynamics were there already. Man just pulled the pieces together. But you know, that's just an example of innovation, right? But even that's not man's real fruit. Man's real fruit is his chidushei Torah, because that's what Chazal say this, right? There's nothing new under the sun, but above the sun there is new. Under the sun refers to technological advancement. It looks like it's new, but kvar haya lo'olamin, it really was always there already, because the laws of aerodynamics were also there. Man, it just occurred to man how to put the two together. Form metal in a way that is aerodynamics, and now you have a plane that can fly, right? So really, really in the depth of it, man also over there just put the pieces together, right? But the, the Torah, the Chidushei Torah, is to literally draw down from heaven to earth new ideas that were never on earth before, right? That, the Torah, as it were, even though Moshe Rabbeinu saw, right, when he was in heaven, every possible chiddush in Torah, Mashatan Vosek Shol Rabo, when a student asks his rabbi, everything Moshe Rabbeinu was revealed to Moshe. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't teach it on earth. He only taught us the basics, the basic Torah Shechsav, the basic Torah Shebal Peh, the Midas Shatar, the Jashbem, the tools, how to extrapolate the Torah, how to expand the Torah. Right? But the actual detailed chiddushim, he saw them, right? But he never taught them over. So it's not called that they're fully in earth space. They're only here in a very, very potential form. The way fruit is here in a very potential form, that you do have the earth, and you do have the water, and you have the air, but there's no way that you could just throw them together and have fruit, right? It's through that. And also, like, the Chiddush Torah, it's not like, just mix a Rambam with a Gemara and with a, and it all comes up to a chiddush. We know that we work over our chiddushim very, very hard, and takes a lot of siyata d'shmaya, but when we finally break through, we work with these tools, but these tools help bring down understandings that weren't, revealed within earth space. There's just the preparation to reveal them within earth space by the fact that they were shown to Moshe when he was in heaven, but it just like made the preparation to bring it down to earth space. Showing it to Moshe, who brought Torah to earth, made the potential to bring it down to earth. But the ones who bring it down to earth, is from above the sun, bring it down to earth, that's the Chiddushei Torah, that's man's fruit. And those are the real, real innovations, right? So the tree is like, this creature that makes something new. It may be working with certain axes, but this thing totally new, not just the sum of the parts. And that's Chiddushei Torah. And that's really how you have to understand what Chiddushei Torah are. And that's what real Chiddushei Torah are. Right? No time to talk about the full depth of it. Right? So man can do that. Man can make innovation, which is more than just the sum of the parts. Just like the tree, makes fruit out of air and water and earth. Right? But there's another aspect. And that is that the tree is probably the largest creature that exists in physical reality. It grows very tall, it spreads out, it branches out, it's huge, right? These sequoias and these redwoods are huge, right? And and it's amazing that you have to think about this huge thing that branches out, and like you can have one branch and another branch, like theoretically a mile apart, but it's a very big tree. One branch in one extreme, one branch in the other extreme. And if you would only see the branches and not see the common stem and the common roots, you think it's like two things that are very far apart from each other, right? And really, it's all one thing. It's amazing. The tree's in a perfect unity. The tree's in a perfect unity, right? There's the power of, and this perfect unity is in two ways. Not just that you could trace all the way from one branch to another branch through the stem, through the roots. It's all one thing, but it's something deeper than that. There's the power of the all in the singular unit. You could rip off one branch, put in water, grow another tree from it. Like, it's a perfect unity that you have the whole, the power of the whole in every single part. And that's why from every single pit that comes from a fruit, that comes from a single branch. So like the one pit is like one out of hundreds of thousands of pits, if it's like a very big fruit tree. And from that you grow a whole other tree. It's like a perfect oneness in the sense you have the power of the whole, even in the part. An amazing thing, right? So now, the Sefer HaYosher that's attributed to Rabbeinu Tam says that that's the way you have to look at reality. Right? That reality, you know, is a perfect oneness. It's all one place. The roots of reality are in God, right? Because God is the source of life. God, first of all, is the source of life-giving waters. So the reality is rooted in God, because He's the life source. Right? But we shouldn't look that now the olamas, right, all the olamas that branched out are now something separate from God. As if, like, the branches that are very high up and very far removed from the roots are like their own entity. They're not their own entity, right? They're in a perfect oneness with the roots and they're perpetually connected to the roots, and without the roots they die. So also all the different olamas that we brush create, even the lowest ones where we are, the physical world, which is so permeated with evil and so permeated with, you know, rebellion against God, even that has its full life source from God and is, you know, totally dependent and connected to God. It's distant from God, but it's just a distance that exists in the mind, just like, you know, the high branch. Oh, it's very distant from the roots, but it's getting its whole metzias, it's getting its whole reality, its whole sustenance from the roots. It's not something separate from the roots in any way, shape, or form. You know, it has tremendous distance from the roots. So the distance is an illusion, right? The distance doesn't represent any type of independence whatsoever, right? And that's why the Mekubalim call the setup of reality the Ilan HaKodesh, right, the holy tree, right? You have to look that, you know, God is everywhere equally, and God is the life source of all the different olamas equally, right? You know, the distance that there is between our world and God, it's literally just that. Distance, but that distance has no reality to it. It's like the very, very high branch. It's far away from the roots, but it's totally dependent on the roots, no less than the branches that are closer to the roots, right? And that's the way a person also has to be also. Right, a person should not be schizoid. A person has to love him with all your heart, you know, with all your heart, chazal darshan, even with your yetzer tov and yetzer ra. We have to be totally unified. Kol ma'asecha yiyu l'shem shemayim. All your deeds should be for the sake of heaven. Right, it should be the unity in all our deeds, is what the Rambam discusses in the fifth chapter of his eighth chapter, Drashas Davus. There should be a unity in all the different things that we do, that they're all geared to serve Hashem. And of course, that's easier to come by if you realize that everything about you comes from Hashem.